Hello, and welcome to the Bitcoin Roundup podcast presented by Coinbits. We bring Bitcoin news, hot topics of conversation, and deep dives into a variety of Bitcoin topics to you weekly. We are Coinbits, a Bitcoin financial services company. Check us out at coinbits.app. This recording is for informational purposes only. No investment or legal or any other advice should be drawn from this content. And as always, consult an advisor before making any legal or financial decisions.
On that delicious note, shall we get started? We have some people percolating in, so let's get started here. I see Joe. Hey, Joe. You should now be a speaker. Any second now. There we go. Want to test your mic, Joe?
Yeah. Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hey, absolutely. Thank you for coming. Appreciate it.
Of course. Glad to be a guest.
Awesome. Well, I want to start by saying a few words about Coinbits. So Coinbits is a Bitcoin-only financial services company. We help you buy Bitcoin in a variety of ways. Our oldest product and the one that is we're most known for is called Roundups. And this allows you to buy Bitcoin in small amounts by rounding up your purchases to the nearest dollar and investing your spare change. So it's a really painless and easy way to get started with Bitcoin without worrying about questions like how much to buy and when to buy. It just all happens automatically. And people love that. And recently we've released several new features. You can self-custody your Bitcoin, of course. We're hardcore Bitcoiners, and we absolutely believe in self-custody, and we will help you do that if you need. But our features make it really easy to continuously withdraw your Bitcoin and take it yourself. You can also do recurring buys. We also have a couple of really interesting products coming out in a few weeks, and I just want to name two of them. One of them is we're releasing our Bitcoin IRA. For those of you on the wait list, thank you for your patience. We know it's been longer than you would have liked. And we hear you. Anybody who is not yet on the wait list, if you get on the wait list, it will help you move up in line. So you get on the wait list for the Bitcoin IRA, you'll get a link, you can share it, and when people use your link, it helps move you up in line in the wait list. And we're just gonna be taking, the people at the top and just work our way down. That will be coming out in the next few weeks, we hope. So definitely get on that list. The other thing that we are going to be releasing soon is called Coinbits Cash. And this is a unique feature that lets you achieve US dollar liquidity with your Bitcoin. So, people have been rounding up for years with us. They've they've built a substantial Bitcoin stack. They don't want to sell their Bitcoin because they understand the value of Bitcoin and how it's like the hardest money ever invented. And they don't want to ever sell, but sometimes life gets in the way. You need to pay rent. You want to invest in your business, whatever it may be. So we built this product called Coinbits Cash, where we can provide you a cash advance for 30 days. And then as long as you pay it back, you don't incur a taxable event and your Bitcoin is not sold. Otherwise, it's just automatically sold. There's been no credit check. There's been no debt. It's all good. And you basically just sold Bitcoin as if you had in the first place. So that's a really exciting feature too. And check it out on our website. You can go to coinbits.app and you'll find the Coinbits Cash landing page there. So that's a little bit about Coinbits. And we're about to get into a conversation with Joe Burnett about the halving and other related topics. That's coming up pretty soon now. It's really crazy that we're already talking about the next halving, because I feel like the last one was like last week, but life comes at you fast, I suppose. But before we get started,
first of all, is it the halving or the halving?
It's the halving, Yellow. It's whatever. It's we're gonna coin a new one today. Before I get distracted. Okay, so nothing in this session constitutes investment, legal, or other tax advice or other kind of advice. Don't rely on it to make investment decisions. We like Bitcoin. You're going to hear us talk highly of Bitcoin. We think that it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, but you know, you need to make your own decisions based on your own financial goals. And the views expressed here are subject to change anytime without notice. And by remaining in the space, you acknowledge your understanding and your acceptance of this statement. So with that out of the way, let's get started. I'm going to hand it over to David for the first kind of introduction of Joe and the first question.
Yeah, Joe, thank you so much for joining us. I know that you're the head analyst at Blockware Solutions, but before we get going, I'd love it if you kind of gave us a brief overview of your background, maybe share how you got into Bitcoin and what you're really focusing on right now in your work in the space.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, guys, again, for having me on, and props to you guys for building, you know, an awesome Bitcoin product. Any you know, business in the space that is helping individuals stack more Bitcoin and take self-custody as their Bitcoin is, you know, a great business and a great organization, and we need more of those. So shout out to you guys for what you're doing for Bitcoin. Yeah, a little bit about me. I first discovered Bitcoin, or the first time I remember discovering Bitcoin, was back in 2017 when I was actually in college still. I remember seeing it on Reddit and just being kind of like very confused by it, or kind of extremely skeptical of it, I should say, right? Like, I was like, okay, here's this random internet money thing. And this was back in 2017, where I think at the start of 2017, it surpassed, you know, $1,000. And then by the end of 2017, it was up to, you know, almost $20,000. And I remember following it throughout the year and into the summer. And the thing just like kept going up. It, you know, went above 2,000 and 3,000. And then at the end of the year, it just went from like 6,000 to 19,000 super fast. And I think at around like 6,000, I was like, okay, like this thing literally just keeps going up. I have no idea really what it is, but I'm just going to throw some, you know, a couple $100 at it while I'm in school still. And then obviously I did a 3X from 6,000 to 19,000 very fast. And after that, I dove in deep into Bitcoin and spent the pretty much all of the 2018, 2019 bear market really just trying to figure out like what the space was about, right? Like, I didn't really know. I thought, like many people, that Bitcoin was, I don't know, boomer coin or whatnot. And I thought, you know, the core innovation within the space would be some of the altcoins and other things. And then I realized, well, actually, you know, Bitcoin can't process as many transactions per second as other quote unquote blockchains are, but that's not the core innovation here. The core innovation is creating this asset that's immutably scarce, something that no single human nor a significant group of humans can go out and change. It's, in a way, Bitcoin is the least uncertain asset. It's so difficult to change its future supply schedule that's what makes it so special. And it has all of the, you know, very unique monetary properties, perfectly scarce, portable, durable, divisible, etc. And so once I kind of figured that out during the last bear market, I, you know, went super deep into Bitcoin, started making Twitter threads, stuff like that. Eventually graduated college, worked in technology consulting for a little bit, then found myself back in the Bitcoin space, joined Blockware Solutions full time. And since then, I've been doing a lot of research, education on Bitcoin. I co-authored the report with Riot Platforms, talking about the future of the, you know, block subsidy and transaction fees, which I'm sure we might get into here. And we've released a number of other long form reports, and we run a weekly podcast, a weekly newsletter called Blockware Intelligence. And we also just launched the Blockware Marketplace, which I have helped, you know, kind of designed at a very high level. And we've been rolling that out to our clients and publicly as well. But that's a little bit about me and how I discovered Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that you guys do a really great job on education, specifically in the mining space, which I think is, I don't want to say it's underserved in terms of like education about mining, but I know that a lot of people don't get into Bitcoin initially, at least from that, like the mining and the energy perspective. I think that a lot of people, you know, kind of have a more of a journey like you did, actually, like looking at price first, coming from more of a finance, like investment background. So I guess building off of the, you know, education, you posted a really great thread earlier, I think it was, earlier this week, maybe end of last week, about, you know, why halvings are not priced in. So wondering if you can kind of just walk us through, like really zoom out and walk us through your overarching reasoning.
Yeah, definitely. So very high level, and we can go deeper if you want, but very high level, I think there are three key reasons, in my opinion, why Bitcoin halvings are not priced in. And it's interesting to think about this because you see people in the Bitcoin space and people outside the Bitcoin space, you know, different segments of both, you know, argue that, oh, the Bitcoin halving is certainly priced in, right? Like everyone can look at it. It's in the source code. Everyone can know about this. It's a simple Google search away. Of course, the halvings are priced in. And I find sympathy, I guess, to that point. But I think these three points that I'm going to make kind of counteract that pretty clearly. And the first point around why I think Bitcoin halvings are not priced in is basically if the market attempts to bid Bitcoin ahead of the halving, meaning it's attempting to price in the halving, like because the market thinks Bitcoin is going to go up after the halving. If that does occur, which I think it does historically, what happens is we see a bunch of additional miners come online because the price is moving up significantly. And these miners coming online requires a lot of capital investment into Bitcoin ASICs. It requires a lot of investment into Bitcoin infrastructure. It requires a lot of investment into energy infrastructure. It requires a lot of investment into, you know, mining infrastructure like pods and transformers and all of this stuff. And so you have this, if the price gets too high, basically ahead of cost production, meaning people are bidding the spot price of Bitcoin very quickly and very fast in advance of the halving, what you're going to see is all of this, you know, mining power come online, and miners are typically at least selling the Bitcoin that they're mining to cover their operating expenses, right? And so as more and more miners come online in advance of the halving, basically these additional miners are all adding additional day-to-day sell pressure. And if, you know, the price of Bitcoin is significantly high, then this dollar denominated sell pressure continues to increase as long as more and more miners are joining the network. And so to kind of take it back a step and zoom out from a really big picture perspective, for example, if the price of Bitcoin was $1 million a coin when we woke up tomorrow, simply because everyone that held Bitcoin today decided not to sell it for anything below $1 million, we would see a ton of capital flow directly into bidding for Bitcoin ASICs, building all that mining infrastructure, right? Some people might even consider selling some Bitcoin to do this, as it might make sense. You could say, oh, well, look, I can produce a Bitcoin for $10,000. Why would I buy one for $1 million? And then even if people aren't necessarily selling their Bitcoin to mine Bitcoin, there's still competition there, right? Like people can be like, okay, why would I buy $1 million Bitcoin when I can simply mine it for $10,000? And if I can get my hash rate up quickly and before the difficulty rises, then it on paper, it makes sense to really dive into mining. And I think at that point, we see the price of Bitcoin and the cost of production to produce that Bitcoin kind of converge over time. And historically, what we see is, you know, exactly that, right? Like the price can't get too far ahead of the cost of production. Otherwise, it starts to come back down. So that's the first point. Basically, if you bid Bitcoin too high above the cost of production, then eventually the price is going to come back down and the cost of production is going to rise towards the price. And so the second major point is halvings end up purging the weakest miners on the network, right? So when the halving does occur, the block subsidy, which is part of the block reward that miners get for mining each block, that gets cut in half, right? That's what the halving is. And so the miners that can't survive the halving are the weakest miners, those that are running the oldest generation machines and those that have the highest electricity expenses. And so after halvings, we typically see those miners get knocked off the network. And those are the miners that are actually selling the most Bitcoin, right? And they're selling the most Bitcoin because they have the highest operating expenses. If you're running the latest and greatest generation hardware, like an S19 XP, and you have absurdly cheap energy rates, you're mining a lot of Bitcoin and you're not selling much Bitcoin. You don't have to because you're you're very profitable. Your margins are massive. And so you don't have to sell much Bitcoin. And so when we approach a halving, we end up seeing, you know, the miners that are running older generation machines like S, you know, 17s, and they may have higher energy expenses. Those miners get knocked off the network. Mining difficulty ends up dropping. And then the only Bitcoin being mined are Bitcoin being mined by the strongest miners on the network, which already don't have to sell much Bitcoin because they have, you know, very tight, strong operations. So that's the second point why I think halvings are not priced in, because when the weakest miners get knocked off the network, that's the people that are selling the most Bitcoin. And then when people are selling the most Bitcoin, can't sell much more Bitcoin anymore on a day-to-day basis, that's obviously good for Bitcoin. It's a bullish catalyst. And so the third reason that I think halvings are not priced in is we've seen threads recently from a few people saying, oh, we look at Bitcoin, its block subsidy is trending towards zero. Of course, it's insecure in the long run. And I think after each halving, we only see Bitcoin, you know, get stronger. We see Bitcoin get larger in terms of its market cap. And we see Bitcoin continuing to work, right? We see people trusting Bitcoin transactions are basically deemed final after six or so confirmations. And as long as that continues to be the case after each halving, I think those people that are concerned about the future of Bitcoin's security, or in my view, settlement finality, they'll learn that, hey, maybe my position is wrong here. Maybe Bitcoin works fine as a payment system, and maybe I should actually buy some Bitcoin.
Wow. Yeah, that's there's so much to unpack there. I guess, like, if I could ask you to maybe go a little deeper on that, like the second point, you know, like the talk, or no, I guess the first one really, where you talk about kind of like Bitcoin energy gravity and modeling that relationship between price, operating cost of production. And this is really getting into that report that you produced, Blockware report. I almost said Blockstream. My apologies. I was like, wait, no, it's Blockware. Where you talk about Bitcoin energy gravity, right? And I think that that's really important for people to understand that there's two ways that you can acquire Bitcoin, and you lay it out in a really interesting way, right? You have like dollars divided by Bitcoin, or energy times time divided by Bitcoin. And I'd love it if you kind of talk about that more, and so that we can really understand that kind of mining side of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So energy gravity is a report and a model that we published at Blockware. And to put it simple, it's basically modeling the relationship between the price of a Bitcoin in dollars or any fiat currency and its cost of production, right? And for those that aren't super deep into the mining industry, the main input to mining Bitcoin is simply energy, right? That's a large majority of your operating expenses as a Bitcoin miner. And so you can create basically a model showing, okay, what's the dollar price for Bitcoin? We've all seen that chart, but what's the energy price of Bitcoin, right? Like, how much energy can you put into an ASIC or a mining facility, and how much Bitcoin are you going to get out of it? And then if you convert that to dollars and be like, okay, what are these miners, you know, basically bidding in terms of energy per Bitcoin, you can kind of estimate what the cost of production would be in dollar terms for miners. And so the general idea behind energy gravity is very similar to kind of what I was talking about in the first point as to why halvings can't be priced in. Basically, if the price of Bitcoin gets too high above the cost of production for Bitcoin, people are going to start mining, right? People aren't necessarily going to buy Bitcoin. They're going to buy ASICs. They're not going to buy Bitcoin. They're going to buy Riot. They're going to buy Mara. They're going to buy other mining stocks. Other companies are going to go public and start mining Bitcoin, because on paper, the numbers look really great that you should be getting into Bitcoin mining, because why would you, you know, buy Bitcoin $1 million when you can mine Bitcoin at, you know, $10,000 or $20,000? And so that's the idea behind energy gravity. It's that the price of Bitcoin and the cost of production are going to converge in the long run, which is very, you know, that's a typical thing for commodities to do, where Bitcoin is very different from pretty much every other commodity that ever existed is Bitcoin has this thing called the difficulty adjustment, where when the price of Bitcoin gets bid to extreme levels, very high levels, we see not the the difficulty actually going up. This is because, like I said, people see that there's an opportunity to mine Bitcoin at a cheaper price. So miners join the network and start mining a lot of Bitcoin. And if you're an incumbent miner or you're early to this trend, you're able to capitalize on that arbitrage opportunity by mining Bitcoin at a price that's cheaper than the spot price of Bitcoin. And so very, very high level, that's the idea behind energy gravity. It's just showing that the cost of production and the price of Bitcoin are actually highly correlated. And there's periods of Bitcoin's price where these two metrics get very disconnected, and it's typically a sign that the price of Bitcoin is too far above its cost of production. And what we see is the cost of production start going up through more miners joining the network and difficulty going up, and we see the price kind of fall back towards reality. We saw this, you know, in 2013, we saw it in 2017, then we saw it again in 2021. And to me, I think it's probably going to happen again as we go into another bull cycle. People can't deploy. It's very easy to bid the price of Bitcoin, right? Like, it just takes people buying and not much people selling. The price of Bitcoin can go very high, very fast, as we've seen in, you know, at the end of 2022, end of 2020, early 2021, and we saw it in 2017. The thing is, you can't deploy mining infrastructure nearly as fast as the price of Bitcoin can rise, right? Especially now when ASICs are commoditizing, and the name of the game at this point is just building more actual infrastructure, energy infrastructure, and mining infrastructure. And so for mining difficulty to do a 2x or even, you know, something, if like price can do a 2x really fast, for mining difficulty to do a 2x really fast, we would need to see, you know, gigawatts worth of energy being plugged into Bitcoin mining. We would need to see thousands and thousands, probably millions of ASICs manufactured. And that's not just something that, you know, you can do overnight. These are like real physical items and materials that are needed. And it takes time to do all of this. And so the core thesis is the price can get bid well above the cost of production, and the price will eventually fall back towards the cost of production, and the cost of production will rise towards the price of Bitcoin.
That's great. So here's the thing, though. And you're closer to the data than we are, so you may have insight into this. When I look at difficulty and hash rate over the past year and a half with the capitulation and the price crash from 69 down all the way to 16, 15 something at one point, and you had hash rate that entire time moving the opposite direction, this breaks my model of what should be happening. Because like you said, it's difficult to deploy mining infrastructure, but it's not difficult to just turn machines off. And so what we saw is, instead of machines turning off, we saw the opposite happening. And that to me sounds like miners, not halvings aren't priced into like maybe on the consumer side, but it seems almost as if miners are trying to accumulate. Maybe they believe that the halving is not priced in, and that we're going to see this tremendous increase in the change in the exchange rate to US dollars, where Bitcoin will appreciate tremendously next year. And they're simply trying to accumulate as much as possible before that occurs, so that when it does, you know, maybe they're even using leverage and just saying, listen, as long as we don't have to pay back our loan until after the halving, we're good. We just need to accumulate. Maybe that's what's going on. What do you think is the reason for a historic price crash and a historic rise in hash rate coinciding like that?
Yeah, it's a very great question. I think a lot of people wonder exactly that, right? Like, you see the price of Bitcoin falling from 69,000 to 16,000. And yet pretty much the entire time, hash rate just continued to trend up. And it's confused a lot of people. From my perspective, the way I would explain it is, it takes a lot of time for hash rate to be deployed on the network, right? It's not like you can just spin up a, you know, 100 megawatt mining facility, plug in tens of thousands of ASICs, and have them all hashing overnight. So a lot of the hash rate that we saw come online over the past, 12, 18 months was hash rate that was, purchased and thought to be they were aiming to deploy it, or it was purchased, I guess, in, 2021, the bull market, right? We saw all of those announcements from all the public miners making massive purchases with Bitmain and MicroBT, which are the two top ASIC manufacturers. And because of that, they couldn't just deploy those machines overnight back in 2021 when the price of Bitcoin was $69,000. I'm sure they all wish they could have done that because at the time the margins looked incredible, but building out all of that mining infrastructure took a lot of time. And I think it's, still taking time. People are still building out additional mining infrastructure, definitely not to the same degree as it was back in 2021, but they're still building it out. The other thing I would say is it's still profitable to mine Bitcoin, right? Like you can buy the latest and greatest machines like the S19 XP, S19 J Pro, and you can be converting, $1 of energy into $2 worth of Bitcoin, depending on your electricity rate, right? If you have some access to some of the lowest or cheapest energy in the world, it makes sense to be mining Bitcoin. And so I don't think people have stopped mining Bitcoin, right? Like if Bitcoin mining is a search for the cheapest energy in the world, and you can convert it into the hardest asset in the world. And so people are going to continuously do that over and over again until there's just no energy left. And I don't think there's always going to be energy left because humans are, becoming more productive. They're inventing more technology and making it easier to create inexpensive energy. And so I think to answer your question very specifically, I think there's a large delay between the price of Bitcoin and the increase in hash rate. And we saw that clearly play out over 2022.
Interesting. Okay. I could see that. So hash rate lags changes to the price in both directions because you have miners who have invested in mining in infrastructure that is like a sunk. It's like a sunk cost, or it's like a fixed cost that's already spent. And now, but it still doesn't make sense to me because let's say that they need to make payments on that debt, and they're mining some amount of Bitcoin, and maybe they're in the red. They would still have to like turn off machines, and they don't, or they might be doing it, and other people aren't. So my question is then. So there's this speculation about who's mining all the Bitcoin, right? In your, I don't know if you can track this with data or if it's just speculation, but like who, some people say Russia has secret Bitcoin mining operations in Siberia. I don't believe that's probably true, but that's just one example of kind of these wild theories, right? Who is mining Bitcoin and who is able to operate extremely profitably right now, both in terms of what does their energy cost have to look like, and then also what geographical areas or sort of or jurisdictions or even companies are able to mine profitably right now, and what who's mining more, who's adding all this hash rate specifically.
Yeah, for sure. And also, don't get me wrong, we definitely see miners come offline, right? We saw two fairly serious miner capitulations in the summer of 2022 where we saw negative difficulty adjustments. We saw hash rate drop. We also saw it at the end of 2022. So some miners are coming offline once the price of Bitcoin goes down. But there's still, like if you unplug an S17 and then you end up plugging in an S19 XP, that's basically doubling the hash rate and you're becoming a lot more efficient with the amount of energy you're using. And so you can have miners come offline, you can have whole facilities come offline, but there's going to be other facilities that either have higher, better, more efficient machines, or they have lower energy rates, right? As far as like who's mining Bitcoin it very profitably, right? Like I do buy into Russia being a large Bitcoin mining hub. I've heard, people say that there's a lot of demand for hardware from Russia. I don't have like specific you know, details on that other than very broadly saying that. And it wouldn't surprise me that, you know, they are mining a significant amount of Bitcoin, right? They got cut off from a lot of like traditional financial system, systems, and they have excess energy that they want to convert into, you know, real hard assets. And it kind of was the perfect storm for Russia and other countries cut off from the dollar system to really get into mining Bitcoin. And so as far as like who's mining Bitcoin profitably right now, I mean, if you're running the latest and greatest generation hardware and you're running it at your house, you're not going to make any money. You're going to definitely be probably burning money. But if you are running the latest and greatest generation hardware at a commercial electricity rate in the US, and it's one of the best, it's one of the, like, the better half of commercial electricity rates, you're making money, right? You're going to be profitable at, you know, $29,000 Bitcoin with the current level of difficulty. You're going to be profitable at some at most hosting rates as well throughout the world, right? So people are definitely profitably mining Bitcoin, especially since the price has gone from 16,000 to 19,000. I mean, many people were profitably mining Bitcoin at 16,000. So it's definitely possible. It's hard, right? It's knocking out people that have old generation machines. It's knocking out, you know, more retail miners that don't have very professional operations, or miners with extremely high hosting rates. But generally speaking, most people are you know, profitably mining. When we come into the halving, it's going to get, you know, a lot more tight, especially if the price of Bitcoin doesn't move higher. But time will tell when that comes.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Yellow, I think you have
Yellow. A
hand raised.
Thanks for your insights, Joe. I was wondering, because like I've been in a few cycles, and as Bitcoiners, we do love to follow our models until the break. I was wondering, what do you see something that is different in this kind of the cycle of the halving happening? Something that is a little bit different from the past, and it changes that mathematical domino that the halving is. Is it that like problems that we have in silicon chip productions an issue? Is the way that now the miners are structuring financially, even outside, like they're taking money out of the traditional markets? What do you see different this time that can alter a little bit what we have seen in the past?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, thinking back broadly, back to 2021, we saw, you know, all the public miners basically borrowing as much money as they possibly could, getting ultra long Bitcoin, saying that they're, you know, never going to sell Bitcoin, and just trying to hope that Bitcoin goes from $69,000 to $100,000. And, you know, a lot of them end up getting absolutely pounded when the tides turned and the price went from 69,000 back down to 16,000. And now we see a lot of miners, you know, being a lot more conservative, right? Like they're at least selling to cover their operating expenses. Many are selling even, you know, more than that to just make sure they have some cash and are ready to weather any prolonged bear market. So maybe miners will be more hesitant to deploy capital into mining at the same scale and the same aggressiveness as we saw back in 2020 and 2021 when the bull market really got moving, which I think would probably be good. Like, I don't like the idea of large public miners borrowing billions of dollars and just praying that the price goes straight up and never goes down. But then again, if there's a, you know, a grab for money, maybe the incumbent players won't make super aggressive, risky decisions, but there may be new players that come in and try to do that because they think that Bitcoin will just keep going up. So I don't know. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see, I guess, how traditional markets react to the Bitcoin halving and to a parabolic bull run, if it does occur again, which I have to say I think it will. And I guess another thing that might be different from this halving compared to previous halvings is we could see a larger miner capitulation if interest rates remain high and equity markets don't keep going up in a straight line and times are tough and for example, the US and the world maybe goes into some sort of prolonged recession and Bitcoin can't get too high above 30,000 or even goes, you know, lower from here, then we could see a pretty severe wipeout for a lot of miners, which I think would clean up a lot of sell pressure and a lot of weakness in the market, which, you know, in the short term would be pretty tough for existing miners, but in the long term, it could be good for Bitcoin. So yeah, I think it's a good question.
Thanks, Yellow. By the way, Yellow is a buddy, but anybody else is also welcome to raise their hand. We're happy to take questions. Anybody's welcome to participate. So we have Joe Burnett on from Blockware Solutions. He's a mining expert. We're talking about the halvening and whether the halvening is priced in. Seems like it probably isn't, even though that doesn't really jive with the fact that the information is out there. And, you know, I also think, Joe, that it's funny because as a Bitcoin educator, part-time, I suppose, I'm always surprised at how little information that is out there is really being absorbed by people. And you can call it dumb money or whatever you want, but I really think that there is still... Even though there is so much information out there, perhaps it's just because Bitcoin really it breaks a lot of your expectations and sort of like your existing knowledge of financial markets and money and so on only applies in a limited fashion unless you're familiar with Austrian economics and sound money and so on. And so it almost seems like there's just like there's a difficulty with people even understanding how the system works. And that could be partially responsible for why the halving isn't priced in. It's just like hard to understand. It's like not the first thing you learn about Bitcoin. It's like the fifth or sixth or seventh thing you learn. You know, when you get, like David was saying earlier, you get into, you start to, when you go down the rabbit hole, the first thing you learn is not about mining. It's a whole other discipline. And then you start learning about it. And then you start to understand the halvening and you start to see historical performance of exchange rate and appreciation of Bitcoin. And so actually that brings me to a question. Like, do you think that, what do you think of when you say that the halving is not priced in, to what extent is that saying the same thing as that stock to flow is a relevant, metric for Bitcoin and that has some sort of downstream consequence for the exchange rate?
Yeah, it's definitely a interesting topic, very touchy, I guess, to many people, debatable. I guess my view of stock to flow is the model is interesting. It's technically statistically invalid, which I agree with. However, my view is simply that halvings are bullish catalysts for the price of Bitcoin for those three reasons that I listed at the beginning. And I think because they're bullish catalysts, what happens is we see a lack of sell pressure in the network, you know, a few months after the halving. Because of that, we see the price start to slowly drift back up. And with the price slowly drifting back up, attention gets redirected from other things back onto this random thing called Bitcoin, which the world has all heard of at this point, but they haven't necessarily dove too deep into what it is or why it's important or critically why it's not dead yet, right? And every time Bitcoin goes through another cycle and the price continues slowly drifting back up because of halvings acting as this bullish catalyst, more attention is pointed to it. More people are educated on it. They're reading books about it. They're listening to podcasts. They're surfing Bitcoin Twitter or whatnot. And so I think because each cycle, more people get exposed to it, more people have access to better education in the Bitcoin space. For example, I remember when I first learned about Bitcoin in 2017, I originally wrote it off as like some sort of bubble or some sort of Ponzi. And then I started reading something called the Nakamoto Institute, right, from Pierre Richard, Michael Goldstein, and at least one other guy. And it was a cool, really cool website. You know, it made a lot of sense. I was like, this seems very reasonable, accurate. I couldn't really find a good counter argument to a lot of the points that they were making. But I was like, okay, like I'm, in college right now, And this is just a random website from another couple kids or guys that recently graduated college. You know, obviously this is cool, but it's probably wrong, right? Like, how could I have figured this out, or how could they have figured this out before them, before the rest of the world, right? And so it kind of was like, the quality of education, like the resources out there were good, and they were very simple, and they helped me understand Bitcoin, but they weren't like, oh, here's Bloomberg or, you know, very high profile, respected individuals in like traditional finance pointing to Bitcoin and saying like, hey, this is exactly what, this makes a lot of sense, and here's, and I'm really smart, and here's why. It was kind of just, you know, random blog on the internet that made a lot of sense and couldn't find a good reason as to why it was wrong. And so I think that, going off that, I mean, I think the quality of education and kind of the credibility around Bitcoin is improved over each additional cycle. We see Bitcoin doesn't die. The people like Paul Krugman or whoever that say Bitcoin is, you know, worthless, going to zero, they keep getting proven wrong, right? And it makes people actually question it. And then you have better books come out. You have the Bitcoin Standard came out, I believe, you know, during the 2018 bear market. You have, you know, other people writing great books, doing great podcasts. You have Robert Breedlove doing his What Is Money show, very professional. I mean, Peter McCormick doing What Bitcoin Did. It's like a really cool advanced podcast. I mean, it looks like Joe Rogan on the podcast. It's like actually good media. So I think there's a lot better, more respected, and more resources being poured into producing Bitcoin content and Bitcoin education. And it makes it more reasonable to believe that Bitcoin is legit. I know I kind of went on a tangent there, but I think that generally speaking, going back to your original question, stock to flow model is cool. I don't think like specific prices it puts out are like, you know, obviously 100% accurate by any means whatsoever. But I agree with the idea that halvings are simply bullish catalysts, and they help usher in the next wave of Bitcoin adoption. And whenever the next wave comes, that's when we see, you know, the next parabolic bull run.
That's very interesting. By the way, you mentioned Paul Krugman. So we've been trying to get Paul on the show for months. If anybody here can get Paul on this show, we've got some questions for that man. And anyways, okay, so we have a couple of people with raised hands. So because Bitcoin, you have the floor. Please go ahead.
Hey, what's going on, guys? This is King Wabi from Because Bitcoin. Are you guys able to hear me?
Yes, yes, yes.
All right, perfect, man. Yeah, so, you know, we follow Joe here at Because Bitcoin. And so, you know, I figured I might as well join the conversation. I know the halving is something that's starting out the rumblings. And the current discussion is it priced in? Well, I think we're starting to see that with some of the banking crises that are occurring. Back in March with SVB and all that stuff, we practically V-shaped out of it. And I'm the proponent that, you know, history may not repeat itself, but it often rhymes. And if we look back over the course of 10 years, whenever similar situations like this have occurred, really, we can go back to what occurred in Cyprus, right? In Q1 of 2013. And, you know, after that, we started our parabolic run. And, you know, we can even think even years before that occurred in the 08 financial crisis, when the inception of Bitcoin came to fruition, right? At least that's what the white paper says, you know? And so I'm of the proponent that, you know, the next parabolic cycle had started in December, right? When we started seeing, you know, fraudsters like SBF go on these Twitter spaces and play World of Warcraft and just stutter and say, oh, I'm sorry, guys. I don't know what else to say. You know what I'm saying? So it's sort of this meme effect as well. I think that's what's different about this environment. It's somewhat of a meme effect. You know, you're having meme coins spring all over the place and all that of the like. And of course, with these Twitter spaces, it adds a new dynamic to the social capital within the system. And it's a lot more engaging. So I want to thank you guys, not only for hosting the space, but for allowing me to partake in the speaker panel. And great to be here, man. Great to be here, gentlemen.
Thanks so much. I appreciate the comments. That's wonderful. And looks like you have a pretty cool show. I checked out your profile. Anybody here is interested? It seems like Because Bitcoin is an interesting show. I'll have to take it out. Yellow, yeah, you also raised, and do you want to say anything?
Yeah, because I have to go. So I have a final question for Joe. Joe, what do you think came first, the chicken or the egg?
Great question, Yellow. I don't know if I have a good answer there.
Well, you have to. It's pretty similar to our question.
Yellow, it's Bitcoin. It's Bitcoin, stupid.
Okay. Bye, guys. I have to go. Cheers.
Thank you, Yellow. See you later. And we are going to be wrapping it up in the next few minutes here because we got to let Joe go. He has a commitment coming up on the hour here. So I just want to open up to questions one last time. Anybody have any like last questions for Joe? We're talking about halving or the halvening, whichever you prefer. We're talking about mining and hash rate, price. Anybody have any last questions? If not, I will... I'll let David ask one more, or I can. David, it's up to you.
Oh, I'll go. Just, you know, one thing riffing off of what you said, because Bitcoin, it does feel like the there's a really positive, you know, outlook on Bitcoin, and it's developing from even outside of like just the native Bitcoin space, right? Like I saw, if you haven't seen it, Trammell Venture Partners released a really cool report yesterday about all the VC money that is pouring into Bitcoin, but also demonstrating that it's still very undercapitalized. But you know, since I have you on this one last question, Joe, I'd love it if you gave a brief overview of something that I see all the time with my academic friends and skeptics about Bitcoin's long-term network security. They say it's uncertain because there's like no incentives that will be driving miners when the block reward is so low. What's your, like, you know, quick response to that? Because that's, for me, one of the most frustrating things when I'll have like a free market academic that I'm talking to that would be very, you know, have a positive opinion about Bitcoin, but they think that this is an uncertainty that's, you know, just kind of stifles them a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. And oh man, this is a huge topic. So I definitely encourage people to read the report that we put out with Riot Platforms. I think it'll do a lot more justice than me talking about the high level summary for a couple minutes. But yeah, it's a super interesting topic, right? Because you see people in the Bitcoin community and people outside the Bitcoin community paint different narratives for what's going on with Bitcoin, like transaction fees, right? We sometimes see high transaction fees in Bitcoin, and the naysayers are out there saying, oh my gosh, you know, Bitcoin can't scale. This is never going to work. Then you have some people in the Bitcoin community saying, oh my gosh, you know, high fees, like Bitcoin's ultra secure. And then you have the other, you know, situation where we have low fees, and Bitcoin community is like, hey, actually, Bitcoin can scale extremely well. Look at the fees. It's super cheap. And then you have the, you know, non-Bitcoiners say, oh my gosh, you know, Bitcoin has no security. So it's just very ironic and funny how both sides, you know, continuously paint the narrative to match whatever's going on in the current moment. One way that I like to explain this, and again, I'd encourage you everyone to check out the report for more details, but one simple way that I like to explain this is you can look at something like Bitcoin Cash right now. Right now, the Bitcoin Cash block reward is about 5 times less than the Bitcoin fees per block, right? So Bitcoin transaction fees are already significantly larger than Bitcoin Cash's entire block reward. And Bitcoin Cash is, you know, while it's pretty, in my opinion, pretty much worthless, it's still a $2 billion market cap. Coin. Like that's actual money that you could make if you wanted to short Bitcoin Cash or attack it or do whatnot. Yet we still see Bitcoin Cash is tradable on Coinbase, on Kraken, on Binance. They all deem Bitcoin Cash transactions final after 15 or 100 confirmations, which is still less than 24 hours, which is pretty good considering like that's deemed final settlement for a large millions and millions of dollars traded on a daily basis. And so if you just compare Bitcoin Cash, you know, total block reward to already Bitcoin transaction fees today, Bitcoin still works. Bitcoin Cash still works to settle stuff. So I think it's already, you know, overly secure, in my opinion. And I think what people, if people are really worried about Bitcoin being attacked or they are worried about Bitcoin settlement finality, really what people, users of Bitcoin can basically do two things. One, they can wait for more confirmations, right? Like if you're sending $1 million to somebody, and for some reason you think that this person has obtained 51% of the entire network hash rate, and they're going to attempt to defraud you and double spend on you, you can simply wait for more confirmations, right? Like, that's not a big deal. If you wait for 24 hours or 48 hours, you're most likely, like, you can see that there's, okay, more proof of work in the chain for that attacker to reverse your transaction. They're going to have to do a lot of work, especially at today's rate, and I think a lot of work in the future. And so that's one thing that you can do. If for some reason you're worried, you can wait for more confirmations. The second thing that you can do is if there is a 51% attacker and they're censoring transactions, you can simply increase your transaction fees, right? Like, that's kind of how Bitcoin works. When we see congestion in the network, we see people increase their transaction fees, and then honest miners are working fast to get their transactions included in those blocks. If we see, for the same reason or for a similar reason, you can't get your transactions in a block, maybe it's not because of congestion, but maybe it's because there's an active censor on the network, you simply increase your transaction fees and you encourage honest miners to actually include your transactions in the next block. And so that's the general thesis behind the report. You can go a lot more in depth than that, and it's a very complicated topic. And I think virtually no one, even very few people outside the Bitcoin space understand it for sure, and even very few people inside the Bitcoin space fully understand it. But that's my high-level summary of that report.
That's awesome, man. So speaking of that report, and I know you've got to go, maybe you could just take a few minutes to let us know how we can get in on Blockware Solutions, information intelligence, and what types of things that you're offering. Just kind of show your wares here for a minute and let everybody know where they can find you and what you'd like them to do next.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, guys, so much for coming on, or letting me come on. This was awesome conversation. Really enjoyed it. Yeah, if you guys want to learn more about our research that we do at Blockware Intelligence, definitely check out blockwareintelligence.com. The link should be in my Twitter bio. Also, check out the Blockware Marketplace. We just launched this, where we have Bitcoin ASICs hashing in Blockware-owned facilities in the United States. You can buy them, you can sell them, you can trade them. People are doing it live right now. It's pretty cool to watch, and we're seeing a very much more transparent market in the Bitcoin mining industry kind of develop. So if you want to check out that, go to the Blockware Marketplace. It's marketplace.blockwaresolutions.com. But yeah, other than that, you know, thanks for letting me come on, and really enjoyed this.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate you. And thank you for coming on and lending your very interesting analysis of mining. Everybody, we are going to close here now, but we are CoinBits. We are a Bitcoin-only financial services company. You should check us out at coinbits.app. We think it's the best UX in the business for obtaining Bitcoin and building a Bitcoin stack, slowly but surely. And we do this every Friday. At around the same time, usually it's this exact time. So follow us on Twitter to make sure that you get notified for when the next one is. And we also started recently on Wednesday, midday, we do a weekly Bitcoin briefing where we just go over the news in Twitter spaces, and you're welcome to participate in that too. So thanks everyone for coming today. Have a wonderful rest of your day and weekend. And we thank Joe Burnett again, and we'll talk to you all later.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you all having me up here.
Thank you. Oh, thank you, because thank you. Take care, guys.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Bitcoin Roundup podcast presented by CoinBits. So what do you think of the conversation? Share your thoughts with us on Twitter at CoinBitsApp, and be sure to subscribe to be notified of our next episode release. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on the Bitcoin Roundup podcast.